Today is August 2nd, 2020, and it is the 18th Sunday in Ordinary Time. How is it August 2nd already? It feels like I just started doing these recordings a couple of weeks ago, and that was back in March, I think, when I started doing these on a pretty consistent basis. Well, consistent is perhaps not the right word there, but still, get off my back. Anyway, time flies when you're having fun, or when you lose all concept of time because it's a construct of the mind anyway and not a real thing. I don't know. Why don't I just get on with it? So it's kind of, I guess, a good thing that I haven't been recording a whole lot of stuff lately, and that I haven't necessarily been on the live stream a whole lot lately, because you've been spared what has probably been some fairly bad preaching on my part the last couple of weeks. That's a ridiculous statement. It's not that it's been bad preaching. It probably hasn't been good either, but we've been doing this kind of continual reading of Matthew's gospel at Mass the last couple of Sundays. You know, a lot of parables with some teaching discourses mixed in. Not a whole lot of miracles. I mean, a little bit here and there, but mainly just some parables, and kind of explaining those and working through those has been what I've been doing. And generally, you know, as a preacher, you probably should stick with the gospel and kind of make that your point of departure for what you're going to preach on, at least on a Sunday. You know, during the week, you know, we also do continual readings there, but you do continual reading in the Old Testament too. So you can kind of develop themes out of that, whatever. But on Sunday, it seems like the gospel is something you should stick to. And so I've been doing that to the exclusion almost of some of the other readings. And sometimes it's easy to work in the Old Testament, but I have been ignoring the New Testament readings. And that's particularly a bad idea in these days. So today's second reading is the end of chapter 8 of Paul's letter to the Romans. We have been reading from chapter 8 of Paul's letter to the Romans for the entire month of July. And we were in other sections of Romans back in June. I know that the last Sunday of June was an extra from chapter 5 of that letter. Could have been 6, but I think it was chapter 5, and I'm not going to look, even though I'm sitting on my computer. Before that, I honestly can't remember, you know, what we were doing, but we've been in Romans for a while, and I've not been talking about it, and that's dumb, because Romans is considered by many, probably a majority of scripture scholars, to be Paul's finest work. And that's a bold statement. You know, he's written a lot of really good things, but Romans is considered his magnum opus. There is one scholar, and I can't remember who has gone so far as to say it's the gospel according to St. Paul, that the truth that Paul teaches in the letter to the Romans is as true and as important and as powerful as the truth taught in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So, you know, it's certainly worth talking about. And it's probably, you know, I think the reason why it was so good is that I'm guessing that it was the hardest letter that Paul had to write. Because the community in Rome is the most diverse of the communities that he's writing to. I mean, just the nature of Rome being the capital city of the empire, you've got people from all corners of the globe, if you will, in Rome at that point. And you've got, you know, Jews who were converts to the faith. You've got pagans who were converts to the faith. You've got people that haven't really yet converted but are listening and interested in what's going on. You've just got a lot happening there, a lot of different languages being spoken, different customs. So to be able to write to that community and write something that's going to be accessible, I guess, or something that they can all kind of hear and understand, that's a little more difficult, you know. But when you're teaching truth, and you're teaching truth in a clear and authentic way, it does become a little bit easier. The other reason why I think it would be difficult for Paul to write to the Romans is because at this point, he hasn't gone to visit the church in Rome. You know, he's going to get there at the end of his life. He goes to Rome to die. But I don't believe at this point he has visited the church in Rome yet. So he's writing to this community sight unseen. He's shouting into the dark with this letter and hoping that that they receive it in the spirit in which it's given. I mean, that's a daunting task. So Romans is a, you know, very deliberative and well thought out letter, and it's a very powerful letter. That being said, within the letter itself, there are certain points that, like, you really have to pay attention to, and really chapters 5 through 8 are the meat of the letter. And it's said that chapter 8 is the most like profound, poetic, theologically dense, most beautiful, most everything good, most superlative chapter in that letter. So we're looking at, like, the most important chapter and the most important letter that Paul's written. We've been reading it now for 5 weeks in a row, and I haven't really preached about it. I'm not very good at this. So I want to say a few things about it today. What you hear in the readings today is the end of chapter 8, as I said, and it's kind of his summation of everything that he's doing, not only in that chapter, but really in the three chapters preceding it. So Paul's essential message to the Romans and to all of us is this. Yes, there is sin. There is a lot of sin in the world. And it is because there is sin in the world that things are as broken as they are. And you know what? You participate in that sin as well. You are a sinner, and there are times that you fall short of what you're supposed to be, and it's because of our sinfulness that the world is as messed up as it is. However, there is also grace in the world. And the grace that has been given to us through the person of Jesus Christ is the most important grace in the world that we can think of. And it's that grace that changes things, because that grace is stronger than the power of sin. In fact, that grace is stronger than the power of even death itself, because we know that Christ died and came back from the dead. And because God has chosen to give us this grace freely, and on no, you know, through no merits of our own has he given us this grace, we are able to participate in it. We are able to live as people who have been changed by grace. But we actually have to do that. We have to live in that way. It's not enough for us to say, oh, well, I've received grace, so I'm fine. It's, no, I've received grace, and it's changed everything about me. And so when I'm faced with trials and sufferings and persecutions, I can rejoice and be happy in those things, because I know that I'm different because of what God has done for me. I know that there's something greater than all of this that's waiting for me on the other side. I know who my Redeemer is, because he walked among us. He lived like I did. He suffered the way I did. And he came back from the dead and ascended to the right hand of the Father in heaven. And so when Paul writes today, you know, what will separate us from the love of Christ? Well, anguish or distress or persecution or nakedness or the sword or any of these things, or the you know, the Democrats or the Republicans or the COVID or the murder hornets. Like, none of those things are going to separate you from the love of Christ, because it's more powerful than any of those things. And so neither life nor death nor principalities nor powers nor present things nor future things, none of those things are going to have power over us if we let Christ have power over us. Because in reality, the only thing that's going to separate you from the love of Christ is you. And we do it all the time when we start to act like his grace isn't enough. His grace isn't sufficient for us. And we have to do everything on our own. And we have to rely on our own power and on our own strength. That's never worked out for you. It's never worked out for me. And yet we keep trying to do it. One day we'll learn our lesson. You know, look at what happens in the gospel today. Jesus goes off to a deserted place because he wants to pray. And the crowds follow him, as they tend to do. And when he gets to this deserted place, when there's nothing there, there's nothing for him to work with, it's just him, his heart is moved with pity for the crowd, and he cures their sick. But then he does something even greater. He takes pity on them and realizes that they need to be fed. And he calls the disciples and he says, well, look, we've got to feed them. Well, actually, the disciples go to him first and they say, look, you got to send these people home. We can't do this. And they're right. They can't. but he can. And so, of course, they protest when they say, look, we only got 5 loaves and 2 fish. And, you know, sidebar, how did they think they were going to eat? You know, if they only had 5 loaves and 2 fish and you figure there's, like, what, at least 12 of them, do you think that's sufficient food? I would guess not, but that's – we'll move on from that. He says to them, well, give me what you have. And looking up to heaven, he breaks the bread and he gives it to the people, and everybody has more than enough. Because it's not about how little or how much they have. It's about how much of his grace he wants to bring into that moment. How many times have we said, oh, I can't do that. I can't do what the Lord is asking me to do because I'm not holy enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I'm too scared. It's not about you. It's about him and what he can do through you through the power of his grace is far, far greater than what you have imagined it to be. So stop letting things separate you from the love of Christ. Isaiah's prophecy is right in the first reading when he says, you who are thirsty, come to the water. Not you who are thirsty, stay there. Water will be brought to you. You have to come to him. You have to decide that you want his grace in your life. You have to decide you want to cooperate with it. You have to decide that nothing is going to separate you from the love of Christ. So, you know, something to think about this today, this whole week, is how much, what are we letting separate us from him? What are we trusting in more than his grace? And then we have to ask him to get rid of that from our lives. His grace is the most powerful force that's out there. His grace is there to transform us. His grace is there to make us into the people that he wants us to be. His grace is there to help us build up his kingdom. We need to stop saying no to it and start saying yes to it and living as people that have been changed by it, that we might be a witness to the rest of the world and drink and attract many more souls to him, but also that we might do the work of building up his kingdom here on earth so that one day we can be happy with him in the kingdom of heaven. Nothing can separate you from the love of Christ except for you. So make sure you choose appropriately this week, that everything you do might be for your sanctification and for the greater glory of God. See ya.